Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, 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 and welcome into Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And we've got a jam-packed show for you lined up today. Hope you guys are doing well on this Tuesday. And by the way, if you're new to the show, please hit the subscribe button. Please smash that like button if you're new here. What happens when you hit that like button, it actually pushes us out further on YouTube's algorithm while we're doing our live show, just during the live show. So just smash that like button.
It's how you tell your friends without telling your friends, right? But you could do that too. You could do all of that stuff.
Hey, I you know, whatever Janice is watching must be really good because I'm starting to see. Janice is always my thing. How's everyone doing in the control booth today?
I am doing.
There's Philip.
Yep. And I hear myself twice.
Uh-oh. Okay, well, we are only hearing you once, and
well,
that's perfect.
I can live with that.
Yeah. Okay, all right, good. Everyone else in the chat, do you hear Philip once or twice? His points are so good that sometimes we need to hear them twice.
Spoofy says, all my friends don't believe me in the chat. And Russell, I don't know what that means, Spoofy. Oh, Spoofy says, I got you, bro. Okay, yes.
Oh, they're hearing you twice?
Are people hearing, you guys are hearing us twice?
No, they were only hearing Philip twice.
Okay.
I asked if they heard Philip twice. Okay, but us, you only hear once.
Do you guys only hear us once? Let us know in the chat if you hear us once or twice.
This is yet another case for Philip to turn on his camera so he can interpret his comments through dance. Right. He has so far refused to do this, but we'll keep
Philip
trying.
Has an echo. All good, Zishan says. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, coming up on the show today, we are going to talk about the conflict in Ukraine, more revelations about that. We're going to talk about a leak from State Farm that shows that they are pushing transgender issues, I think, in a bad way. And I'm going to make that case.
Okay.
What else?
We're also going to look at Hillary Clinton. So Hillary Clinton has some answering to do for what unfolded during the 2016 campaign. And the other shoe appears to be ready to drop on this. So we're going to dissect what Hillary Clinton has done and has now. We're now getting confirmation from the Hillary Clinton campaign that she knew what she was doing and she signed off on it. So we're going to talk about that.
Plus more information out of Davos, which we kind of ripped into yesterday. They have not proven us wrong that they are well-intended and well-meaning.
So what is the tease there? So the tease is that at Davos, you're not going to believe some of the latest commentary from some of these guys. And it all comes back to control. I mean, that's all it is. There was a number of panels yesterday, a number of different speeches. And it all had to do with, like, how can we control you?
Yeah.
Like, how can we, follow you?
How can we, unelected people, decide how to control you and then, therefore, decide what's best for you?
Yeah. So please hit that subscribe button and please join us by smashing that like button because it'll push us out to a larger audience.
Neepak asks in the chat, makes a good question. He says, what does it matter about Hillary anyway? And you'll see. I think it does matter, even though she's not running for anything. I think that there are problems in this story that remain to be fixed.
Yes.
So we will make this point. And if at the end you still don't care, that's okay too.
Yes.
It's okay not to care about it.
Before we go on, I want to tell you about our next partner. They have a product that I literally use every day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted to feel better. I wanted to have more energy and I didn't want to have like 30 bottles of supplements in my medicine cabinet. Literally, or at least think about like going on vacation, right? You're going to bring all these bottles and a little pill case and all of this stuff. Athletic Green gets rid of all of that. It gave me better gut health. It gave me better energy. It eliminated all of those bottles of pills and I get 75 vitamins and minerals and whole sourced superfoods in one scoop of Athletic Greens. And probiotics. One thing Natalie always like pushes me on is probiotics. Like we need that gut health for digestion and just the microbiome is so incredibly important for mental health and like, you know, warding off Alzheimer's, right? I mean, that's a big thing, right?
Yes, and yeah. Prebiotics as well, probiotics and prebiotics.
So that's how I start my day off right, with Athletic Greens. They have a special blend of ingredients that support your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, your recovery, your focus, and aging. All the things. And my mom even signed up for it. I know so many family members that have signed up for it. They have a special formula called AG1, okay? And AG1 benefits your lifestyle in a number of different ways. A lot of times, you know, you don't have the energy, so you're relying on all these like sugary drinks in the morning, like, oh, I'm gonna have a coffee with sugar to wake me up. No, what if you actually had vitamins, like something delicious in 12 ounces of water that you shake up and actually tastes really delicious? It's not like powdery and chalky. It tastes really, really good. Really, really important to take multivitamins. And once you have all of these, zinc, we know the benefits of zinc, holy smokes, to make sure that you're staying really sharp against getting colds and sicknesses. Vitamin D, they have the vitamin D drops as well, which is so important that you can add in during winter months. Frankly, a lot of people don't even get enough vitamin D during the summer. So your subscription to an Athletic Greens actually comes with a year's supply of vitamin D. So incredibly important for your benefit, for your health. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into any kind of flu season or cold season. Just get your body ready for that as we head into the fall of the year after this lovely summer that we're about to have. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. 12 ounces. That's it. Scoop 12 ounces of water. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your very first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/invest. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/invest, I-N-V-E-S-T. So just go to athleticgreens.com/invest to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Our thanks to Athletic Greens. All right, well, let's talk about what's going on in Ukraine. So a big update today in Ukraine. Something actually big just washed up on the shore in Ukraine, and it proves what we've been saying here on this show, that Ukraine has a big problem on its hands. So they are losing this war in a big way, and they're actually finally starting to admit it. They're finally starting to, they're kind of admitting it kind of in a roundabout way. So what washed up on the shore? Well, here it is. Here's a look at what washed up on the shore today in Ukraine. This is in Odessa, the biggest port area, of course. This is a mine. Doesn't look like something. It looks like something from World War II, doesn't it? But in fact, no, this is recently deployed. It's not just any mine, though. These are Ukrainian mines that they've used to blockade their own ports. This one is in Odessa, as I mentioned, in Ukraine, and it is blocking their biggest port. So what does that mean? That means like all grain going in and out. There's no way. Any sort of heavy weapons or anything else that's trying to come in there.
So many questions.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Fire away your questions. Drop them like a mine.
Yes. Okay. So they discovered their own mine that they did not previously know was there.
No. They knew they were there. They put these mines there.
But it's not supposed to wash up on shore. Because that's not how this works.
No, I mean, here's the thing. When you drop things into the ocean, you really don't have much control of them. You know, if they're tied to a rope or whatever, great. You know, how long does that rope last? They take them now to fields when they find them. But the bottom line is they don't know where any of these mines are. They're all over the damn place, right? So they are all over the place, and they don't know what to do with them. And now the Pentagon is actually admitting that these mines are blocking all Ukrainian ports, which means they've effectively stopped the flow of goods and equipment from coming into the country. So this was an amazing press conference. There's so many sound bites from this press conference that I want to play for you, but I won't. I'll show some restraint. This is General Mark Milley. He admits basically that these mines are blocking Ukrainian ports right now. And it's a major, major problem. Listen to Mark Milley on this port issue in Odessa.
The port, you're talking about Odessa. I think you're talking about Odessa. And obviously, Odessa, a major port for Ukraine. It's their access to the sea and the outside world. And it becomes a significant vehicle by which grain, for example, is exported and other commodities coming out of Ukraine. And Ukraine is the largest or one of the largest grain producers in the world. And thus far, because of mines, because of the Russian fleet, because of the risks associated with it, that has not happened here now going on almost 90 days. So how important it is, I think it's quite important to the economy of Ukraine and well beyond. Many countries in the world depend on Ukrainian grain. So that's an example of the importance of it.
Doesn't he, by the way, when you look at him, like if you could like draw like what a picture, like a Bugs Bunny general.
Oh, yes.
You know, like what you would think like a general.
He is like a caricature of a military general.
Like a general with like a giant cigar. Like, let's go in there. We got to bomb these guys.
We're not happy about these bombs, you see.
So that's Mark Milley admitting that this is a shit show and that they have these mines all over the place and they can't get into these ports. So they put these mines there because they wanted to keep Russians out. And what they're end up doing is they're keeping themselves out. And they're also keeping out the ability for us to use those ports to bring in any kind of other heavy weapons or light weapons or anything like that. So
now you would think that there'd be some tracking.
Oh, yeah.
So that you could go and pick those back up when you wanted to use that port again.
Just like you'd think that there'd be tracking of all of their mines that they have on land right now. Not only did they put these mines all over the sea, but they put them all over Ukraine and they don't know where they are.
I mean, literally, you can track your luggage now.
With an AirTag. Can you slap an AirTag on this? But they can't. A new report shows that these mines
might
have...
Well, I understand why you wouldn't do that, right? Because that would be hackable.
Right.
So, okay, now the enemy would come in and know exactly where they are. So you wouldn't do that.
Well, a new report shows that they only know where 80,000 of these are. And they've found 80,000 of these so far. That only accounts for like a fraction of all of the mines that they've placed in the country.
Okay. I mean,
just think about that for a second. They just don't know. They're literally, they've laid all these mines and now it's affecting them and they don't know where they are. So they're blocking their ports, the ability for them to get any kinds of additional food out. So forget any kind of grain. Think about the amount of grain that is now causing a worldwide shortage.
Yes.
Right. You're not going to be able to do it. They haven't been able to plant it. And now we don't have what ship is going to want to go in there to pick up the grain? Yeah, I'll go in there. Sure. Like maybe I'll survive, maybe I won't. I don't know. I'm going to go into this port where there's mines everywhere and we can't account for them.
Okay.
On top of that, again, another bombshell admission from Ukraine today that they almost are surrounded, ready almost to be completely cut off in eastern Ukraine as they run out of weapons. So now this is I want to put up this map. This is, where is my map here? So this map is the land map from Ukraine. This is land. I'm trying to find it here. Of course, I have it bookmarked wrong. Let me see here. Here it is. This is liveuamap.com. This is their very own map. This is Ukraine's own mapping. So this is not a Russian propaganda website. This is actually a pro-Ukraine analysis of moment-by-moment troop movement in Ukraine. So this shows you what's about to happen.
And so red is Russian forces.
Red is Russian forces in Ukraine, in the Donbas region, and down into Crimea, right? And I want to point your attention to sort of the center here, which is about to happen, which is these areas here are about to be surrounded. Also, we had troop attacks and firing attacks along this rail line earlier today. So that means that Russia is hitting both these rail lines and other roads going into the eastern Donbas region. So now they're basically controlling all of this area, and they're about to be surrounded and cut off. Now, Kirill Budanov, who is the head of intelligence of Ukraine's defense ministry, now says they will turn this war around by entering Crimea by the end of the year. Crimea, which overwhelmingly voted to part ways with Ukraine and join Russia in 2014. So Ukraine says we are going to basically invade Crimea towards the end of the year, and that's how this will all turn around. And the reason they give, by the way, let me pull this up here, the reason they give for moving into this area is that they are going to, that's how they will get heavy weapons back into this area, is that they will be able to bring in additional heavy weapons by going through Crimea. And they will be able to bring in additional heavy weapons.
Because that's the only way you'd be able to do it. By the end of the year, though, I mean, this map looks like you don't have that kind of time.
Right, exactly. So by the end of the year, you're going to be able to do this?
And those words, right, I mean, forgive me for being cynical, but the United States only offered aid through the end of September, right?
Right.
And so how? Right. If where is there another United States waiting in the wings to fund this, or presumably just the United States?
Well, this is like the ultimate question right now. And so it really comes down to, how is Ukraine going to get these weapons? Is the United States going to continue to bring all of these weapons in? Are Western leaders going to do it? It was all on the lips of Davos over the past few days.
Or do we get like a credit since they're on hold? We don't have to keep spending that money, or is that money spent, right?
Right. No, I mean, I guess they'll just have to wait for it. I mean, the other big shoe to drop today was war criminal, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. Yes, Kissinger of all people. Here he is. If you need a little reminder of what this guy is, here he is hanging out with his old pal, Richard Nixon. He was Secretary of State under Richard Nixon. So Kissinger of all people admits that Ukraine has lost and better give up their land to Russia before it's over. That's what Henry Kissinger said at Davos. He says Ukraine must make Russia concessions to end conflict. Kissinger warns against escalating Ukraine conflict, urges peace deal with Russia.
That's
because it's over. Now, just for some context here, Kissinger has got a lot done in his first 2 years in office when he was with Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon, of course, he helped sabotage the Vietnamese peace talks for his own political gain. He expanded the war into Laos and Cambodia, therefore destabilizing the entire region, which paved the way for the rise of the Khmer Rouge and the death of up to 2 million people, and advocated for the bombing of, in his own words, anything that moves, his most famous quote, let's bomb anything that moves.
Oh, yes.
And in 1971, Kissinger backed Pakistan in its war against Bangladesh, despite evidence of the massacre and rape there. Then in 1973, if we forgot, he orchestrated a military coup against the democratically elected Allende regime of Chile, installing instead the violently oppressive Pinochet dictatorship. So that's Henry Kissinger for you, who's now, I guess, trying to remake himself at 98, 99 years old now as like a dove. You know, like we're almost going to forget that he's a hawk, but he's basically saying, you guys have lost. The only way for this to end in any kind of, you know, smart way is for you guys to give up. Here he is. Henry Kissinger says Ukraine must make Russia concessions to end conflict. Give up the land.
May I just
That's it.
Point out a theme here, if
What's
I
the
may,
theme?
Is that last week we had this Freudian confession from George W. Bush.
Right.
And now Henry Kissinger is a harbinger of peace. Maybe these violent men
I thought about that. Yeah.
have this peaceful reckoning in their old age, because with age comes this wisdom, and they think, wow, I wish I hadn't been so murderous and had so much bloodlust.
Maybe.
And maybe we should listen.
Maybe. What do you guys think in the chat? Do you think that that's the case? That these guys are like coming to a point in their life when they're like, you know, maybe this is what we need to do now. We need to, you know, we need to come back. We need to be peaceful.
I'm just saying that's kind of a nice thread at this point in time when Congress has bloodlust, for sure. You know, it seems to be the appetite. So, yeah.
Well, so let's unpack this Henry Kissinger thing a little bit more, because immediately, of course, if you're a war hawk and you don't want this, you're immediately going to jump on this. And here's exactly what a lot of the Western press did. Henry Kissinger is wrong. Ukraine should get Russian territory. So now, you know, this is the Western, right? This is the United States. No. We're going to funnel heavy weapons into this area, and we're going to take over Crimea. We're going to push into the Donbas region. We're going to take over Donetsk and Luhansk, and we're literally going to fortify those areas, because that's the only way that this ends. Even though Noam Chomsky, of course, what did Noam Chomsky say, right?
Noam Chomsky said that the West is dragging Ukraine into a conflict that will take every last Ukrainian until they are allowed to back down. And the only way out of this is either Ukraine falters or there's peace talks, which Western forces are actively discouraging.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And he said, look, the issue is, and I think he makes a great point here, is that the only way that this ends is by Russia winning some of this land. There is no way that we can go into this region and continue to support this war because it will or to overthrow Russia or to move against Russia, he says. It would totally disrupt Europe. It would totally destabilize the entire region. It cannot happen. We shouldn't even attempt it. And I just wonder if, like, you know, anybody in the White House is listening to this, or are they sitting back saying, "Oh, come on, Henry, you're 98 years old. You clearly don't know what you're talking about."
Or they're just hoping that people, you know, are kind of like, "Is he alive? Right. Do we have to listen to him?" You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts on that, Philip?
No, I mean,
do you want to ring in?
Oh, sorry.
You can. You don't have to raise your hand here. You can go right ahead.
No, I think we're alone.
Let's try. Okay.
Nope, I still hear myself twice.
Never mind.
Okay.
I don't have anything to say today.
I'm sorry about that, but if you text it to me, I will read your. I'll read it like in the chat. It'll be like your own little super chat.
I'll be like David.
Yes. Okay. I want to ask you, before we move on, I want to tell you about this State Farm story because it's got my hair on fire. But first, I want to ask you, can I have your power source? Because I'm low. Do you absolutely need it?
No.
Okay. This was my fault, you guys. I didn't realize I was dead until I got here. I know that's super annoying when your coworker does that.
Mm-hmm.
So give me a second.
Hey, if you're watching right now, which you are, please smash that like button and share this with somebody else that you love. Please, please, please get this message out there. We are independent journalists covering the news free of billionaire influence. So thank you guys so much for supporting what we do here on this little dog and pony show.
Okay. Today's show is brought to you by Thuma. Now, you might know that a chaotic bedroom creates a chaotic state of mind, right? But you know when you go to a hotel and everything is fresh and clean and organized, you feel better, right? So why don't you take that experience and give your own bedroom a refresh? Now is the perfect time to elevate the most important room in your home with Thuma. Thuma practices an intentional less is more design philosophy for the bedroom with clean lines, subtle curves, and lifestyle enhancing details. Thuma proves that simplicity is the truest form of sophistication. Introducing the Bed by Thuma. Check this out. It's handcrafted from eco-friendly, high-quality, upcycled wood. You'll find beautiful, unique variations in the natural grain. The minimalist design featuring Japanese joinery helps elevate any space. It's super supportive for your mattress, breathable, and made to naturally minimize noise and create space. It's made for how you live, the Bed by Thuma. And it's also backed by a lifetime warranty. And it ships right to your door in 3 easy-to-maneuver boxes. It takes about 5-ish minutes to assemble. With no tools required, you can easily build it yourself. Along with the bed, Thuma offers other bedroom essentials to elevate bedtime, such as the nightstand, the side table, and the tray. They're perfect complements to the bed. Plus, Thuma works with One Tree Planted to plant one tree for every bed and nightstand sold. So create that feeling of checking into your favorite boutique hotel suite, but you're actually at home with the Bed by Thuma. So right now, go to Thuma, that's Thuma.co/redacted to receive a $25 credit towards your purchase of the bed, plus free shipping in the continental U.S. That's Thuma.co/redacted, Thuma.co/redacted for your $25 credit for your new The Bed. You have them all at the ready. Okay, here we go. I'm going to tell you about this State Farm story. Okay. State Farm today backtracked after emails were leaked showing that the insurance company has been giving out books on transgender and non-binary to children as young as 5 years old. Now, the mob is out in full force about this, calling it grooming and indoctrination of young children. So let's put that piece aside for a second and talk about why this is yet another example of how companies should not do politics because it distorts your rights as a voter. So this reporter from Consumer Research obtained emails from State Farm and the screenshots of the book that we're giving out. If you take a look here, yes, Consumer Research. So Consumer Research started in the 1920s as a product testing company, but in recent years, they've morphed into a consumer information company, and they are very anti-corporate wokeness. So they watch for companies to make these kind of moves, and then they call them out on it. So now we know they're biased. Okay, so let's look at the email. The State Farm email is really grainy screenshot, but it does seem legitimate. It asks for agents to volunteer to give gender books to, quote, their local teacher, community center, or library of choice. The email says the goal of the project is to increase representation of LGBTQ plus books and support our communities in having challenging, important, and empowering conversations with children age 5 plus. Okay, again, we're setting aside the content of the books for just a minute, and just ask yourselves, should State Farm, an insurance company with $6.5 billion in assets, take a look at their stock price just from today. State Farm is obviously a powerful company, $6.5 billion in assets. Should they be influencing public education in any way? If you believe in democracy, you should answer no, no matter what the content is. Education is set at the state level. Elected officials in each state set education goals and content. These officials are elected by the voter, and each voter should have one equal chance to influence who gets to decide these things. But State Farm decided that its politics should have more of a say on than the voter, and took it upon itself to pass out this material. So would we care if the material was non-controversial, say, about how wonderful bees are, right? In theory, we should still care and object to corporate influence in education because we collectively have to come to that decision together, right? That bees are wonderful. We should not be relying on corporations to tell us anything. We should want no company influencing education and alienating voters' choices, period. Now, what's worse, this email was sent to agents in Florida. So ask yourself, what happened in gender education in Florida recently? Well, Florida's elected officials have passed a law stating that gender and sexuality education is not allowed in children younger than third grade. But the email says we can go ahead and do that anyway. For 5 and up. This bill is controversial, of course, but a lot of Florida voters do support it. So State Farm is stepping over those voters, right? Now, is this a liberal stance to let State Farm do this? Well, in 2010, the Supreme Court held that corporations can donate to political campaigns, thereby influencing the decisions more than the average voter. Most liberals hate this ruling, right? They do not want to treat corporations like people. Yet when a corporation does woke politics, isn't this the same? Shouldn't liberals and conservatives alike hate these political moves? Okay, so now let's look at the material that was given out. It was a collection of books, one on being transgendered, one on being non-binary. They were both prepared by a group called the Gender Cool Project. Now, the books may be well-intended to make space for people who are non-binary or experience gender in different ways, although I think the books actually promote gender binaries more than they break them down. So, for example, in this book, it talks about a boy who sees himself with long and flowy hair and a dress, and in order to do those things or wear those things, he needs to be a girl, right? A transgendered girl. Now, I take issue with the fact that a boy can't do those things unless he becomes a transgendered girl. Isn't that more of a binary rather than less? Can't we break down the gendering of things rather than gendering the person? Isn't that less confusing to a child? So here's an example. My 5-year-old this weekend was discussing the new Harry Styles album, which is fabulous, and her kindergarten classmate says, he wears dresses. So look at this picture of Harry Styles, right? And we all agreed that it's awesome that he feels good wearing a dress because a good dress can make anyone feel fierce. Let's all agree on that. And the conversation was not about his gender. It was about the ungendering of the behavior, not assigning him a gender, and then deciding if his actions fit into the social construction. Does that make sense? Do you see what I'm saying here?
Yes.
It's like we're saying that if you have effeminate qualities, but you are assigned the gender of a boy, you must be transgendered. So you must transition into a different gender because these are unacceptable for a boy. So don't stay there. So a boy, right? So in my opinion, this is perpetuating the social construction of long hair and dresses for girls. When my five-year-old thinks it's fine for a boy to wear a dress and does not need him to be something else if he does that. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Right.
So according to the book...
Like this is like David Bowie.
Okay, yeah. I mean, my point was that like Prince solved this 40 years ago, right? We didn't need to know much about like that's what he wants to wear. So according to the book, though, if a little boy wants to wear a dress, he must be transgendered because this is a feminine activity. And I reject that. Prince rejected that. You're right. David Bowie rejected that. Like, so, we like, should be past this. Now we need
like State Farm to funnel the money so we can like actually start doing therapy and drugs to make this happen. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, right?
They don't go that far. And that's a whole different conversation. But, you know, I think that it doesn't leave room for a boy who still wants to be a boy, but wants to do feminine things. And they're like, well, if you want to do feminine things, you better just come over here and transgender because boys can't do that, right? Or a boy who is effeminate but wants to be a boy and maybe is a gay boy. There's no space for that either. It's like, oh, you are effeminate. You better just come over and be the gender that you're not, right? And I find that highly problematic and incredibly simplistic for the purposes of giving it to children early. Now, I think this is sort of important. These gendered behaviors, children can understand and sort of reject them, as in, like, I'm a girl, but I'm going to wear my hair short, right? Gender binary, though, and sexuality, they cannot. Children are not taught reproductive biology until the fifth grade in most states. And that's for a reason. So this idea from this book that the doctor looked at my body and decided my gender bit is very confusing and premature. And it ignores the fact that the doctor decides your gender based on your reproductive parts because all species are meant to reproduce, right? So whether you identify like the male or the female part of your reproductive parts, if you don't want to play that part, right? That's a whole other story. You can identify as a different, as something different, right? But this is sort of, this biology is not taught until the fifth grade. So why are we now pushing it up to kindergarten to third, right? So should this be discussed in maybe the fifth grade when biology is discussed? Maybe, but that's not what State Farm is doing. State Farm says that it did not, and State Farm further says it actually never gave these books out in schools. The idea was like give it to a library or a friend. But if you look at this Facebook post here from a school in Washington State, it shows quite different. Where I don't see it right off the top of my head. Nope. Yes.
This one?
Yeah. So this is a school in Washington saying, hey, thanks for the book, State Farm. And they clearly did go into a school, not in Florida, but in Washington State. So that seems to not be true. Now, the Gender Cool Project has many other corporate donors. So State Farm is not the only company supporting these initiatives. So here are all their other corporate donors that may or may not be giving out books, but at the very least support this initiative. So these companies are doing politics, right, in a way that you may or may not agree, and they are not elected. So since these leaked emails, State Farm has sent an email telling its employees that it would not do this anymore. The email there in black says, we don't support required curriculum in schools on this topic. But why now? Why can't they just explain why they did in the first place?
Because a whistleblower, right? Can't they're backtracking.
They, right. Yeah. They should at least be able to stand for what they did get involved with and say, well, we thought that these books created a safe space for transgendered kids, right? And then we could have the discussion that I just had, which is actually, I think they perpetuate a gendered binary, not create a safe space, but okay. In my opinion, State Farm or any company like that should not support curriculum in schools on any topic. They are not voters and they are a corporation. And this is, I think, just another example of why woke capitalism is such a joke.
Well, and I loved too that they talk about like their original program was supposed to recruit hundreds of new agents and staff volunteers to help diversify classroom, community center, and library bookshelves with a collection of books to help bring clarity and understanding to the national conversation about being transgender, inclusive, and non-binary. I'm more confused. Like, if this is what you guys were going to try to accomplish, I'm more confused by this. Like, you're going to try to bring clarity. This makes it cloudy to me. This
yes.
is some clarity here. This is way, way more crazy to me.
Yes. I agree. Also, the idea that does this then make it a safe space for people who work for State Farm, who might say, I'm not comfortable with this project, but I do want to keep my job. So does this then create sort of a religious atmosphere inside of a business, whereas freedom of expression should be a protected? And, you know, obviously somebody felt uncomfortable with this project in order to report it. So they are alienating their employees.
I just don't get what their end goal was. I mean, is it just literally to curry favor with these companies?
But if that's the case, why not stick with it? Why apologize and say we shouldn't have done that?
Right. I mean, just because you're embarrassed now that an email obtained by Libs of TikTok sold you out, you know, got you.
It was not Libs of TikTok, but Libs of TikTok did perpetuate the email. They sent it around more. It was this consumer rights group.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they backtracked after Libs of TikTok published it. So I assume that that was the thing that put it over the edge because they have such a large following.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know.
I don't think this is what you would call indoctrination, but I do think it's problematic gender discussion. I hope I've just made that point. And another reason why, you know, they don't have a doctorate in gender studies or sociology or anthropology or sexuality or anything like that. They are not elected. They are not experts. They are just doing something, you know, which I cannot explain because they did not defend it when they were called out for it.
Right. I would love to know, on a side note, like this is always what happens with these woke movements, right? These companies that do this shit is that it's sleight of hand. It's like, look over here what we're doing. We're trying to provide clarity about children's books and gender in schools, right? And so look over here. But don't look over here where we've been denying people policies or denying insurance claims because we just decide not to give these people insurance claims. I mean, the insurance industry is just rife with this kind of garbage, right? They deny policies left and right. And so I would love to know, like, how many policies did they deny last year based on a variety of issues, you know?
Right.
Let's look into that.
That's a good point.
And maybe if you really care about people, and if you care about families and diversity, it'd be really interesting to actually take a look and see how many insurance policies you guys turned down last year. And for what reasons did you do it?
Yeah. And I also care about children. And I was encouraged at my daughter's discussion about, like, that dress could be for me or for him. And that's okay either way. And we don't need him to have a label in order to wear it. And also, you know, and then she went on to say, well, I wear my brother's clothes sometimes, and that's fine too, right? And so it's like taking away the gendering of things is what's more progressive than actually assigning some kind of gender label to a kindergartner.
Right. Here's just one example. Here's one example, literally just the other day. Ninth Circuit Court reverses State Farm's win over an injured worker. So an injured worker who tried to file a state, you know, to try to find insurance policy, State Farm fought against it. And, you know, here's someone filing like a worker's comp claim or whatever to cover for injuries while working for a company. And you can't get that. We're not going to cover those injuries.
Yeah, I mean, I would be very interested to see how State Farm maybe supports anyone who has medical issues who is transgendered, right? Because a lot of the pharmaceuticals that are pushed on transgender children are not approved for children who are actually going through puberty. So when that actually happens, like when these things have any kind of contraindication, is State Farm really a good neighbor? This is an interesting question, or, you know, like, so nice, give out the books, but what is there, you know? But again, pointing out these sort of contradictions is like, you do this, but then you turn around and do this, right? Is, I don't think, the most productive woke, anti-woke stance. It's more that, like, you're not elected. We don't want your politics to weigh more than ours, the voter.
Right. To me, it does help to call out the hypocrisy.
Sure, sure.
Like, you're going to donate millions of dollars to Black Lives Matter while at the same time also trying to make sure that your workers can't unionize, and you really talk about how you care about lifting people up and lifting communities up and really focusing on diversity, right? At the same time, you go to great lengths to make sure that they can't unionize, that they are fired using a cell phone app instead of in person. So I'm tired of all of these companies.
Yeah. None of your business for a super chat says it used to be that it was okay to be male and effeminate and female masculine. It made the perfect marriage. Now, even those terms, I'm wondering how we're going to get, you know, crucified for saying.
Yeah, you're not even allowed to say tomboy anymore.
I am all about just ungendering everything so that we don't have to jump into labels. And again, I wonder how you alienate someone who wants to be a boy but is effeminate and will end up just fine and gay, right? But you're messing with them by saying you can't be a boy and stay effeminate. You must come over to a different camp. What are we doing to these children without just letting them discover themselves, without all of these like jumping to labels? We heard a podcast recently, Clayton and I, while we were driving, about a young boy who his grandmother said, like, he's not a real boy because he read poetry, right? Because she had gendered that activity as a female thing. And his dad said, well, I don't know what she meant by that, but I'm telling you, he's 100% male. And that meant everything to this boy because he wanted to do what was considered effeminate, but he also wanted to be a boy, right? Whereas by this literature, it's saying if you want to do effeminate things, you can't stay a boy.
Right.
And I don't even know where to go with that, right? And so I'm just going to stick with my little girl who's like, boys can wear a dress and still be a boy. Or they cannot, right? These are not things to define at five.
Right. Someone in the chat asks, wait, what do you mean we can't talk about tomboy?
Like, you're not supposed to say that word anymore. It's
ridiculous. I can't keep up with this. Kimchi Noodle says, I was a tomboy. Yeah, in fact, there was one woman I just read. She said, yeah, I was a tomboy. I always wanted to play with the boys. And she's like, that was a phase I went through when I was little. And, you know, now I'm a happily married woman with kids and whatever. It's like, it doesn't mean you're going to become a lesbian or something, or that if you are showing that you need to now transition to become a boy.
Right.
We need to start taking like hormone
suppression.
Maybe
you can just be a lesbian.
Medicine.
That's okay too.
Yeah. And maybe you like playing with trucks, you know, and maybe you like hammers.
Right. That again
Nails.
Is something that does not need a gender. Right.
Because you put on a tool belt, does that make you a tomboy? You put on overalls, like, you now you're a tomboy. Now you're a lesbian, or now you definitely have to transition. Get those hormone suppression drugs out.
Yeah. Well, okay. I can't explain why we're not supposed to use the word tomboy. But
I don't know.
I think it's
one of those things where you feel like sometimes you just don't even want to like leave the house anymore. You're like, what happened? Like, can we just go back to the 90s or something?
I guess.
You know, like,
that's a cop out though. That's like,
I don't know.
That's a, you know, old man, get off my lawn. I used to be able to like slap the waitress in the butt type joke. Like,
wait, you can't do that anymore?
No, you also cannot do that.
I can't slap waitresses in the ass.
I think it's worth having a discussion about, like, we're progressive enough to say that things are not gendered, but we don't have to rush to gendering kids either and make them choose or switch or anything like that, right? So we can at least keep up with the times, but understand that, yeah, some of it is just, like someone in the chat said, this reality is too crazy to be true.
I know. It's so strange. All right. Let's talk about Hillary Clinton. So Hillary Clinton has some splaining to do, a lot of explaining to do. You know things are bad when CNN, here's a CNN headline. Hillary Clinton personally approved plan to share Trump-Russia allegation with press in 2016, campaign manager says. That's CNN.com.
Yikes.
You know it's bad, right? So what's going on here? Well, a few characters that we want to introduce you to. First is this guy, Robbie Mook. Robbie Mook. Here is Robbie Mook. There he is. He is one of Hillary's campaign managers. That's Robbie Mook. And then we have, who else do we have? We have Michael Sussman. Michael Sussman is right here. This is Michael Sussman, Democratic National Committee. He was the lawyer. He was the lawyer for Hillary Clinton's campaign. So you got the campaign manager and you got Michael Sussman. That's Clinton's lawyer, Michael Sussman. So what happened? Well, we all know that Hillary, Mook, and Sussman, we now know this, that Hillary, Mook, and Sussman got together and created a fun little story about Donald Trump. They concocted a bullshit tale that a Russian bank was communicating with Trump's server, which, first of all, on the surface, like just making that up even sounds bizarre and odd.
Well, it's a I know you are, but what am I move, right?
How so?
Because she was all about using
the
server,
email. Yeah.
Right?
The private email. Yeah.
Can't we think of another device?
Right. So she's like, yeah, well, let's sign off on that. Ooh, another server story that gets me out of the headlines
they
about
like
my emails?
They like talking about servers? Okay, let's turn this around.
Let's do it. So they literally made this up. They literally concocted this thing from scratch, fed it to the press, and then the liberal media ran with it for 2 years. But, of course, we now know, and we knew, I think, probably well before that, that it was a total lie, right? It was a total lie, a total fabrication. So let's go deeper on this because the walls are starting to close in for Hillary Clinton. We know all of this, though, because testimony from Mook himself at Sussman's trial. So again, this is Robbie Mook testifying. I guess, you know, once you actually have to go in front of judges and you're testifying, you're going to probably start telling the truth. So let me read from the Wall Street Journal and what he said during this trial. So he says, we know it came from the top, candidate Hillary Rodham Clinton. That was the testimony Friday by 2016 Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook in federal court. And it continues, while this news is hardly a surprise, it's still bracing to find her fingerprints on the political weapon. Mr. Mook then testified as a witness in special counsel John Durham's trial of Michael Sussman, the lawyer accused of lying to the FBI. In September 2016, Mr. Sussman took claims of a secret Trump connection to Russia's Alpha Bank to the FBI and said he wasn't acting on behalf of any client. Prosecutors say he was working for the Clinton campaign. So they concoct a story that Trump is basically in bed with the Russians. They invent this, right?
Yeah.
How do they do this? Well, this guy Sussman worked with cybersecurity researcher, opposition research firm, Fusion GPS.
Oh, I've heard of them.
Yes, you have. To fabricate the claims on behalf of the Clinton campaign. They make basically phony digital breadcrumbs that never existed. And by the way, Trump denied it all along. He's like, we don't have a server talking to a bank. He's like, we don't have any of this. I don't even know what you're talking about. Clinton's own lawyer makes up this shit. Okay, Sussman makes it up and then drops it like it's hot at the hands of the campaign team. Takes the fake story, gives it to the campaign team. Like, holy shit, I just found this amazing piece of information. I just was walking down the street. I just found this. We just happened upon this. Here you go. You should probably look at this. So then Robbie Mook, Jake Sullivan, go to Hillary Clinton and they get her approval to send this to the press. And then Mook admits in testimony that Hillary said, yep, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead with it. I sign off on this. Let's leak this to the press.
Now let's put a pin in that for a second and remind you that she was a lawyer, a good lawyer, right? A successful lawyer. So a successful lawyer who would have known, we need to verify this. We need a paper trail, right? If we're going to be pushed on this, what can we say that we knew was true, right? So there's no burden of proof here. It's not the idea that she had sort of sold us is that she was a successful lawyer. She was an A student in law school, that she would know better than this kind of thing. But in this moment, she was not that, which was one of the reasons that I endeared to her at the time. I was like, this lady, at least she's been doing the homework for all these years, right? But she did not, in this case, do the homework. She signed off on it because she was playing politics. She was not being the Hermione Granger that I had given her credit for.
So here's how CNN writes it up. Robbie Mook said he attended a meeting with other senior campaign officials where they learned about strange cyber activity that suggested a relationship between the Trump Organization and Alpha Bank, which is based in Moscow. The group decided to share the information with a reporter, and Mook subsequently ran the decision by Clinton herself. We discussed it with Hillary, Mook said, later adding that, quote, she agreed with the decision.
Okay, yeah. But she didn't make the decision. She didn't make it. It's something. Okay, don't give me that look. It's something. She didn't make it up, right? But she went with it.
She went with it. She didn't make it up, but she agreed.
But someone on her team made it up.
We can't verify. We don't know. We don't know. Also, we have to believe for a second that she has no idea that this is happening, right? That she's literally kept in the dark. That her lawyer, Michael Sussman, that Robbie Mook, Jake Sullivan, no one made her aware of any of this. That she's just totally, like, plausible deniability. That's the real question here. Like, what did she know about the plot? Right. That's the ultimate question.
Trump
here
got off on a lot of stuff with plausible deniability that you could never pin his fingerprints on. Right. So.
Well, that's the ultimate question, right?
Yes, it is.
We discussed it with Hillary. She agreed with the decision, which they did. And they released this then to Slate Magazine. They released it to Franklin Fuhr over at Slate Magazine, who published then the bogus story, which had massive implications, of course. Here it was on Slate. Was a Trump server communicating with Russia? Access to nearly comprehensive logs of communications between servers. Mr. Mook said Mrs. Clinton was asked about the plan and approved it. A story on the Trump Alpha Bank allegations then appeared in Slate, a left-leaning online publication. So the article gets published by Slate by reporter Franklin Fuhr, and then the next day, Hillary Clinton sends out this tweet. Right after the Jake Sullivan summation of the Slate article, computer scientists have apparently uncovered a covert server linking the Trump Organization to a Russian-based bank. Statement from Jake Sullivan. So she tweets the statement from Jake Sullivan, who, by the way, is Biden's national security advisor. So just amazing.
Right
to
in
think.
This minute.
Right. Right now, Jake Sullivan is working for President Biden, right? Like, think about how this, how is this guy still allowed to have a job? Ask yourself that. And then, so she tweets that, she sends that tweet out. Computer scientists have apparently uncovered a covert, she's like playing it like she's just, we don't know, apparently this happened.
Look at this bad news about my opponent.
Wow, it's so surprising that this just turned up. So, here's how mainstream media, I mean, I'll just give you a taste of how the mainstream media covered this story. Now, this is 2 years after this story broke. And the Trump campaign denied it all along, saying this is total fabrication. But of course, the left-wing media was like, this is just too obvious, right? Trump is definitely connecting with Russian banks, absolutely, even though it was totally false. Here's how Rachel Maddow played this. And just watch now as just like how giddy she is about this whole thing. This is, by the way, this video is 2 years after the story broke. And watch how she fawns over the new coverage that just got rolled out that day in The New Yorker and how they played this up. Just watch this.
Probably all just a big coinkydink. But for whatever reason, at the height of the campaign in 2016, a server used by that bank kept making contact with a server at the Trump Organization. When that server was being used for almost nothing else, why was it communicating with a Russian bank?
Yeah, great question.
It's a vexing little mystery. Ever since Franklin Foer first reported on it for Slate.com 2 years ago, Halloween night, right before the 2016 election, it has been a very controversial piece of reporting. Well, now, Dexter Filkins at The New Yorker has picked that up and run with it. And, you know, even if you have felt like this is one of those confusing stories, one of those sidebar stories about the Russia investigation that seems too technical and you're not sure you get it, pick up a copy of The New Yorker or go to NewYorker.com. Just print out this Dexter Filkins article. Don't read it online. Print it out. Read it on paper. Read it in a quiet moment. One of the blessings here is that Dexter Filkins is a very, very good writer. And I promise you, even if you have been mystified by this story before, you will be intrigued by it the way that he has written it up.
Go on.
And I'm going to let him tell you the story. But just to prepare you for that conversation, here's a few things that he sort of blew the lid off here with this piece in The New Yorker.
Oh, did he? Number one, please.
Turns out that at the same time Franklin Foer was pursuing this story at the very end of the presidential campaign in 2016, the New York Times had been pursuing it too.
Oh, really? That sounds interesting because, again, Franklin Foer knew nothing of this story. It was literally invented and handed to him by the Clinton campaign. So, really? Also, the New York Times was working this angle of this story? Wonder where they got that information from. I wonder if we'll find out how many other shops this was shopped around to.
Yes.
Right? If the New York Times was actively working on this story as well, well, then clearly they were shopping it around to multiple places. And somebody bit, by the way. It's interesting to think about what crappy news organization actually bit this, right? And was like, yeah, we'll run with that.
And did not report it themselves.
Right. So he was pursuing this story. I love how she frames it. Franklin Foer was pursuing this story. No, he woke up one morning and it was in his inbox, typed out for him. That's how he pursued it. Someone handed it to him. So the New York Times was not pursuing this either. They were literally, I mean, either being shopped it or this is total bullshit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Investigative reporter for the Times named Eric Lichtblau had the story and was working on it even before Franklin Foer started working for it on it for Slate. As part of reporting that story, Eric Lichtblau at the Times apparently came to learn that the FBI had an open counterintelligence investigation underway into possible contacts between people associated with then presidential candidate Donald Trump and Russia.
Oh, interesting.
How'd they get that lead, do you think?
Oh, don't ask those types of questions.
Well, we know now, in fact.
Right.
In fact, new information from that trial shows that the Clinton campaign sent those probes to the FBI, and the FBI was under the assumption that the Justice Department was passing down this information in order to open an investigation, but it was not the Justice Department. It was just because the Clinton camp, you know, was so well connected, they were able to sort of make it seem like, hey, open an investigation about this thing.
And that was the brilliant part of this, right? Which is that Michael Sussman, the lawyer, says, you know what, we are really concerned about this story. We're really concerned about these things that we just learned.
Yes.
That we fabricated, but we just learned this about Hill, you know, about Trump. Here you go, FBI. You should really look into this.
Now, recall at this time in the campaign, right? One of Donald Trump's favorite things to say was, "You can't elect someone who is actively under investigation by the FBI," right?
Right.
Well, that would make him unelectable right now, but okay, right? And so she then was trying to get an investigation to be opened about, or her camp, about him, so that that line would backfire, right? Because at this point, there were so many chants of lock her up. There were so many people convinced of her criminality. And so this sort of shows a, like, again, I know you are, but what am I, kind of like, let's just stick that right back on you, if that's what you're saying. I think what upsets me the most about this is because, you know, I supported Hillary Clinton. I did feel, well, I told you how I felt about her. But, you know, at the time we thought that Trump yelling fake news was sort of a weaponization of news in order to deflect things from himself And, you know, then he just continued to scream it. So if he was actually, like, it really does upset me to think that if he was the victim of fake news, right? And we just sort of, we didn't hear him because of his otherwise unlikable behavior. And now, you know, like, look what we have. Fake news has morphed into disinformation and news has become weaponized even further. And I think that we are still seeing the reverberations of this, and it's only gotten worse. And these are the people now who are telling us what is disinformation, the same people who perpetuated it at the same time.
Yeah, it's really awful. I mean, the Western media was absolutely weaponized, against President Trump. And you can see it. You can, whether you like the guy or you don't. And I don't, you know, I'm going to get into a discussion about that. But it was political malpractice. It was media malpractice. It was criminal what they did to him. I mean, at the end of the day, it was absolutely criminal. And that's why there's a trial, by the way, you know.
But right.
If you think about, like, this Russia-Trump narrative that Mrs. Clinton sanctioned, it did massive damage to the country. Like, just by her allowing this to happen, it disgraced the FBI, right? It humiliated the press. I mean, the press has a worse approval rating than President Biden.
Yes.
It sent the country into a 3-year investigation, which cost millions of dollars, that went nowhere, found nothing.
Well, it went places for
people
around him.
Well, that's what always happens, right? Like, I mean, just look at, you know, I mean, look what happened to Bill Clinton, right? It affects the other people, right?
Yes. Most,
and so that's what happened here, right? A 3-year investigation that basically went nowhere, all because of a lie that they fabricated. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, at what point now Robbie Mook's out there saying, well, she knew about it. She sanctioned it. Is it plausible deniability? Well, I didn't know what I was.
Well, I'm not going to agree with you that the Mueller investigation was nothing. There was something there, but it was not what. I don't want to get into it, but at the same time.
Yes, there were absolutely things there. Absolutely. But what always ends up happening is it ends up becoming a witch hunt. Like, look for anything. Let's start digging up other things. And then
I don't think that's the case.
You don't think that's the case?
No, I don't. I read the Andrew Sussman, is that his name? The book Where Law Ends. He was one of the lead investigators. And it's all about how Andrew Weissman is his name, Where Law Ends, Inside the Mueller Investigation. And it's a really important piece about exactly what happened during that investigation and how they split up and how they followed certain things and how they really tried hard not to be influenced by the media and just, and the decisions they made, which I think were the right ones. So I don't want to say that, but it has, and it's hard to say who did what worse, right? So they both were playing dirtball. Like, they both were playing dirty, both of them. Mm-hmm. He was dragging out Clinton's mistresses, you know, like, no one was playing nice in that election.
No, of course not. But, you know, it's an indictment of the Western media that fell lockstep in line with this. And then Rachel Maddow had, you know, every night for 2 years was Russia. Every night for 2 years, it was Steele dossier. Every night for 2 years, it was all about this.
Yes. Right? And most of the odious things about Trump, like Tombstone is pointing out here, right, which is the grab him by the you-know-what or the crippled journalist or those kind of things, were things he did to himself. The Clinton campaign didn't even have to, right?
Right.
And people still chose him despite those things.
Right. That just goes to show you what an awful candidate she was, right? Like, even all of that, like, you have audio of him saying that and even all of that and the way that, and then she pulls this out of her hat. Even after all of that, being an awful candidate and even this, and she still lost.
But this is the campaign that got people so convinced that the voters who had voted for Trump were misinformed. They only made that choice because they were misinformed. This was sort of what I thought at the time. I comforted myself with this, thinking, oh my gosh, this guy, you know, people must really have just not understood. That's why they voted for him. That was wrong. That was presumptuous of me to think. But now look where we are, where governments are like, oh, yes, you voted wrong. Let us now tell you exactly what information you need to have and what information you shouldn't, right? It's led us down this whole censorship And this maybe not be the small snow, you know, inception of the snowball, but it certainly was a piece of it. And boy, that campaign, what a disaster.
Yeah. Well, let us know your thoughts on that in the chat below. And please make sure you smash that like button. We got one more story we want to get to here.
Okay.
Let's talk about this. All right. Well, one thing is becoming clear. We've been covering Davos here on the show, and it's that time of year again. It's the first time we've had Davos, the World Economic Forum, where these rich people get together to decide your fate. We haven't had this in a few years. So it's face to face, right?
Yeah.
And they're not going to do this thing virtually because they want to be able to go to Switzerland and spend ridiculous amounts of money on food and rub elbows with the elite. But one thing that is becoming clear this year at Davos, maybe more than any other, is that they really, really, really want to control your life. They want to control just about every aspect of your life, from the moment you're born to tracking everything you're eating to your bank accounts, all of it. And you think that I'm maybe being conspiratorial or like hyperbolic, but they say it out loud, and then it happens. And so many of the people, I just reading through a lot of different comments over the past few days about Davos, they're like, in the past few years, everything they said, where we thought it was a conspiracy theory, has come true. It's all happened. And that's where I want to draw your attention today, which is the Alibaba Group president, Michael Evans, boasting about developing a carbon footprint tracker. So this is their new thing, right? I'm going to unpack this a little bit here, but I just want to play the soundbite. And he's so excited about it. He's like, let me just explain how amazing this is. A carbon footprint tracker, so we know exactly what you're doing. Listen to him excited and thinks that we're all going to go along with this.
We're developing, through technology, an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint. Hmm. What does that mean?
Well,
that's where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So, individual carbon footprint tracker. Stay tuned. We don't have it operational yet, but this is something that we're working on. We're developing.
Watch this. I love it.
Through
Hold on. So I want to play that again because I love how he's just like, this is amazing. And you guys are ready to be blown away by what we're about to do to you. Watch.
Technology and ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint.
So
what does that mean?
That sounds fun.
Where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform?
Yeah, we all got around in a meeting room and decided that would be amazing.
What's the carbon footprint of your text?
How can we travel? Can we copy and follow everything that you're doing everywhere you go? So we know exactly what how much carbon you're using on the planet. So the responses to this, of course, were immediate and laughable. John says, we are working on so that you, and so this isn't what that isn't what this is. It's not so someone in the Bay Area can boast about how environmental they are. It will integrate with your banking system with kill switches. So if you go over your monthly allotment of carbon, you are denied.
Okay.
But I love that the way he says that. We are working on so that you. Like that's how many times do we have to hear that, right? We're working on so that you can have this experience. Here's more. Sorry, Mr. Morgan, your vacation has been canceled because you have used your yearly allotment of carbon. Please return home and keep your energy use to under 2 hours per day for the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's scary.
Wasn't this just a conspiracy theory a year or so ago? They really should come with spoiler warnings from now on. Here's one woman who says, my bank is already doing this calculation for me. If you pay with credit card or Swift, they know exactly how much you use. They know exactly how much carbon you're using for...
Based on this transaction of the servers?
Yeah, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah, this is what they're... I mean, this is amazing. So, have I got this right? Neil says, they are going to track how I travel, where I travel, what I eat. Are you serious? This will be so they'll be able to limit our travel, where we travel, and tell us what we can eat. How are we letting this happen?
Okay, I'd like to circle around to a point about... military support then. So can we slap this tracker on military support and say, sorry, you already shipped a bomb this week. That bomb is currently leaking fuel into a water source of a local lake. So you don't get to ship another bomb this month.
Oh, you mean like
come
these,
back next decade?
You mean like these mines that just washed
yes,
up in Ukraine?
Yes, you have used up your carbon footprint.
I'm sure these are great for fishing. Mm-hmm. Hey, mom, can I go play with this? No, honey, don't touch it. Literally. Can you imagine like kids down on the beach like, hey, mom, I found this thing. When they hit this little nipple that sticks out, guess what happens? Billy, my friend, he just exploded.
Like, Hula Hula says they're tracker jackers like from
Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Like this is the kind of crap that washes up on the shores right now. And it would be amazing. I would actually, you know how that guy that was tracking Elon Musk?
Yes. His jet.
His jet. And Elon was not happy about it, offered to like pay him off and whatever. Wouldn't it be amazing if we had like a military carbon footprint tracker instead of like focusing on us citizens, since you said it, what is it, 80% of all
80% of all carbon emissions and energy usage in the American government is used up by the military.
Hmm. So yeah, wouldn't it be great? It'd be great to have an app that we could look at and see, okay, how much carbon, what is the carbon footprint of all of the wars that we're involved in right now?
Right. National Forestry Institute, you're doing all right. You're not, mm-hmm. you know, you're not using up more than your share. That's fine. The IRS, well, you got a lot of servers. We don't have to like you, but you're not, you know, shipping bombs. Okay. Military, we got a problem.
Yeah,
here, right?
A real problem.
You're eating a lot of avocados also. Pump off those muscles.
I think it is, you know, when people say conspiracy theories and you think about the concerns that people have about this stuff, I mean, it's legitimate, right? It's like, oh, we think you're over your carbon limit, so you really shouldn't, as a bank, we're not going to allow you to book this travel. We at Visa think that you've reached your carbon limit. Like,
yes.
This is like something out of science fiction, right? This is like something out of like Wall-E movie or
well,
something, right?
Well, he presents it as if like we are all dying to know this, right?
Yes, because that's what they think that's what they've told themselves. In the same way that ESG, right, is now such an important part of Wall Street, ESG governance.
But
right?
It would shoot big business in the foot if we all knew this, because you sort of put yourself in a grocery store right now, right? You would look at these individually wrapped like croissant or whatever, right? That it comes in a plastic package and each of them inside are plastic wrapped, right?
Right.
But there's big profits on that because it's askew. Whereas you could go over to the bakery and look at the croissant that they just made and you'd see, well, these individually wrapped ones that were shipped across the country have a carbon footprint of a 10 and the ones that this lady just made have a carbon footprint of a 0 or a 2. So I'm going to buy these. So it actually would hurt big business a lot. You wouldn't buy, say, the apples from Washington State. If you're in New Jersey, you would buy the local ones. You wouldn't.
Right.
Right. And so it would collapse big business. I don't think they would give us this information. Even if you just put it, you know, in Whole Foods, they have this sort of local label that's on, like you can see all the milk. And then there's one that has like a big local, you know, Humble Brag. And that sort of is supposed to empower consumers to make different choices. But if this were, you know, mandated, like in New York City, the calorie count has to now be like, would we make different choices and would it hurt them?
I don't know.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah. But the idea of monitoring, though, at Davos, like this is the thing, like we have all of these spending habits. They're running in tandem with what the World Economic Forum's plans are to introduce a central bank digital currency. Which, of course, we knew we would hear about, right? Which all the transactions will be monitored, documented, and ultimately controlled. So they're super excited about this. French Central Bank President François Villeroy de Galliou and Credit Suisse President Axel Lehmann excitedly had this panel discussing the digital currency scheme at Davos yesterday. Take a listen to their little enjoy about being able to track everything you do with their own digital currency.
Fast forward 5 years. Do we have a central bank digital coin out there in the world that is being utilized on a daily basis, whether it's wholesale or retail, and it becomes a superior system? Francois, yes or no?
We have several experiments which are not very far from that. No. They're not yet generalized, but they could be, let's say, the next 3 years, probably. It will go quicker on the wholesale side,
yes.
I guess, because it raises less sensitive questions.
Yes, Axel.
No, I'm glad to hear what you're saying, François, on the wholesale digital currency, but digital currency, not coin. I am also a believer that will come in 5 years. Yes, what I try to say is obviously, you know, we still have those huge legacy environment. They need to migrate as well. So we will not yet see all the benefits coming through, but it will come and will be much more efficient, also probably much more secure, lowering transaction costs. On the retail side, I'm much more skeptical. Certainly call it for the, you know, established economies.
Was okay. He talking about Bitcoin, these legacy platforms? Is that what he said?
Well, I mean, I think he's talking about like the old just sort of transactional platforms, right?
Oh.
Like, but here it's coming. Like the digital currency, so it's all under one roof. They'll know exactly where these things move. They'll be able to track every transaction. Bye-bye to cash. You know, that's going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's all like almost every panel has something to do with some form of globalist control that's unelected, unconstitutional, separate from government constitutions, globalist power structure.
It is the Davos man, the archetype of the Davos man, for whom borders is just an annoyance in their way of control and profit that are thankfully being reduced right before their very eyes.
You should all subscribe to the channel because I have an interview that's going to come out this weekend that I did with Dr. Peter McCullough, who has been probably the most censored doctor in the world. We're going to, he'll be on the Rumble channel. So make and in our private members area, the way to see that interview, it was about an hour long. It was absolutely stunning. He talks quite a bit about the World Economic Forum. He talked quite a bit about Davos. We talked all about, we talked about monkeypox. And we talked about the latest on vaccine technologies as well. So wait till you listen to what he has to say. Here's a guy who's been on the front line and censored, unlike anybody probably, other than maybe Dr. Robert Malone. So please be sure to subscribe. You can go to redacted.inc. And for free, just become a channel member over there. That's our personal website because we need to build a platform away from these big tech oligarchs. And you'll have access to that interview, which we'll publish towards the end of the week here with Dr. Peter McCullough.
All right. Well, we will see you here tomorrow. Oh, no, we have super chats. But can Philip read them in a way that one of them I got live because I was worried that Philip would sound like he was from the moon. Philip, do you want to try it or do you want to text me?
It'll probably be doubled up, but I can put them on the screen if you can see them.
Okay, do that.
Oh, wait. I sound okay.
Oh, wow.
Wait a minute.
Yes. Okay, I see this. Hello, just listening. Super chat from Viridio? I can't see.
Viridian G.
Okay. Cool.
And then
Captain okay.
Steve. Captain Steve says reptilian shapeshifters have no souls or regrets when slaughtering sheeple. That's what I always say.
The more you know.
That's right.
Yes. That could have applied to literally every story we did today.
Yes, okay.
Right. I wonder if he's talking about the reptilian aliens on the moon base.
I don't know. I think it was Hillary Clinton.
Oh yeah. Super chat
to B3A.
Congress people should serve by lottery. Then all laws they pass should be put to a vote of the people. 2/3 needed for all laws.
That would be interesting.
Like the chosen,
like
out
a jury
hat.
Duty.
Yeah.
Wonder if you try to. Damn it! I got chosen as a senator.
Yeah, well, I gotta go. Yeah, I gotta
not go with, do well, some senating.
Right.
I gotta go get some money from Lockheed Martin this afternoon.
And that was it.
All right. Thank you for that. I like that creative idea.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you for subscribing to the channel. It was a slightly shorter show today. I think because I had a long interview with Dr. Peter McCullough today, so my head was knee deep in this new book about COVID and COVID response and all that. So, yes, be sure to subscribe and become a member because that way you can get access to that great content over there. Until next time, everyone, be safe to be safe out there. Be kind to each other.
Be safe to who? Be safe to other people.
Be safe to other people.
And yourself.
Just don't go anywhere near people that are going to hurt you. Okay.
Or don't go, if you see any kind of bombs float up on the sea, don't go near them.
Right.
Call somebody.
If you see landmines, if you see Ukrainian water mines, just please do not touch these. Okay.
Yeah. Call in the authorities, guys.
And who's that? Who's the authority?
I don't know. That person's willing to scrub it with a toothbrush. So Jesus. Somebody.
Yeah. These guys.
Not you.
I wonder if State Farm would cover their insurance policy.
Good question.
Like, hey, what do you do for a living? Well, I find bombs on the beach and I go up and I put a thing over their nipple.
We're done now. Good night, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.